This is a Baby Brunch podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Fed Health. Fed Health's FlexiFed 2 and 3 options offer superb maternity and childhood benefits, including its free Fed Health baby program to see members through their pregnancy and parenting journeys. Choose Fed Health for trusted medical aid cover that gives you choice, flexibility, and control, and that will be with you through every stage of your family's unique journey. Fed Health, we let you be you. The week of the 1st of June, we were to interview Sadia Murat. After a phone call, she was very excited to be interviewed by Baby Brunch, the parenting series, and we were excited to be speaking to her. She was to inspire other women through her story, a global hero of hope, a survivor, a mother of two. And when we called her phone, her husband, Amir, answered. Hi, Amir.
Hi, Lee. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking.
Good.
How are you feeling?
Well, the introduction just got me a bit emotional now again, but I'm fine. I'll be okay. Day by day.
Why did you initially fall in love with Sadia?
I think at first, look, to be honest with you, this is something that I told the paper as well, that I was looking for somebody and somebody special as well. And then I was a boy that was all over the place. I didn't get my head straight to I was still young, and I asked God to give me somebody, the next person to give me, that I can marry this person, and he gave me an angel. So, and that's something I told to the newspaper as well, and everything about her, she was true. She, a smile alone brought, and she got not just me, but everybody that knows her, she could get into your heart very, very quickly. And I thought that she loved me a lot. But when I looked at the broader community, how much she inspired people and how much she loved and cared for the community, it brings tears to my eyes as well. So I don't know what to say, but she really swept me off my feet.
Tell me what happened after your last born. So you have two children and she gave birth to your last born 4 years ago. What happened?
She had a slight lump, or she felt that it was a bit hard at the bottom of her breast. But she just started ignoring it at the time. And it got a bit bigger and got a bit bigger. And then we moved from Cape Town down to Mossel Bay. Not just for that, but my father-in-law suggested that we should move down this side. And when we came here, it was diagnosed as a cyst at first. And then it was drained, and it was hospital in, it was hospital out. And everything was just... No, it's a cyst. It can't be anything else. She's too young for cancer. It's not cancer. It was a long journey, just in and out. And eventually, the one day that we went to the hospital, that they actually did a biopsy, the last operation, they did a biopsy and it came back. And then they did say it was cancer. Yeah, that it was a long journey until they did that. But you know what? I don't look back with regrets and say, you know what, had they done it sooner, or have they looked at why didn't the doctors find it sooner, whatever the case may be. I just made, you know, bygones be bygones, and the fact that everybody looked, God work in mysterious ways as well. If it's your time, then it is your time. And it's just one of those things as well. But we made peace with it. You know, you can't look back and say, but what if this, but what if that, whatever the case may be. we made peace with it, and she was strong and she was brave. The day we went in there, I was scared to go inside, and she told me, let's go in. And when the doctor said, yes, she cried, I cried as well. But immediately her mind changes. Okay, what do I do now? How do I keep myself alive? What is it that I have to do to do that? And even with her pain and everything that she did, she then dedicated her life to cancer survivors and to inspire other people as well. And I remember the one thing that she said in one of her motivational speeches is that there's two important days in your life. It's the day that you were born and the day that you find out the reason why. And this is her reason why, standing in front of the podium, inspiring people as well. So, yes.
How does the misdiagnosis make you feel? The fact that they thought it was a cyst, but actually it was cancer.
We can say that, you know, they could have diagnosed it sooner. The doctors could have done more. Why didn't the first doctor look at it and say, look, but this is not a cyst. Why are we still draining her, putting us through all this? And I mean, do you know how many knives and pipes and morphine and medication and stuff and everything that she went through, and it to go to hospitals in and out, it's tiring. Honestly, it's tiring. It's a mental strain as well. And every time it was, no, it can't be cancer. She's too young. And eventually the last biopsy that came back, or the last operation that she went back to, they said, okay, let's do a biopsy. The biopsy came back and it was cancer. Looking back now, I mean, there's nothing that I can do. Do you understand? That's just God's plan. God, I'm not saying that God have bad plans or whatever the case may be. The thing is that me looking back and trying to blame all the doctors and tell the doctors, look, if you did that, whatever, you could have saved a life. We don't know when our last time on earth is, do you understand? So only God decides when we are born, when we are back, when we will die as well. So I made peace with that. She made peace with that as well. And it's nothing that we can do that's going to change and bring her back as well. So I can't look back and with any, you know, hatred or anything towards doctors or hospitals or anything like that.
I know many people, and often when I stand in a room and I say who's been affected by cancer, or, you know, even our family has been affected by diffuse B lymphoma, where the one day your aunt is fine and the next day you need to carry them to the bathroom, you know, it's a horrible, horrible thing. And what is inspiring me today is your reaction, saying how you've made peace with the process, or the fact that you can understand that a doctor is human and that a misdiagnosis might happen. But knowing that we had an opportunity to chat to Sadia and she was very excited to share her story, and the day you answered her phone, what did you tell our team?
I'm emotional. I just said, look, unfortunately, my wife's no longer here. She has passed on. This was on the 29th of last month, April, that she passed on. And, you know, I told the team as well, you know, that I loved her so much. I never ever loved. Look, I lost my father. I lost my father to cancer as well about 4 or 5 years ago. But he smoked a lot again. But you know, losing your spouse and losing your father is two different feelings. That is somebody that your wife is somebody that you're intimate with. It's your best friend. It's the person that you love. And it was really the saying that, you know, through bitter and worse, till death do us part. And that's what really happened. I mean, the night before, I was laying on the bed with her. And for the first time, I actually moved our baby to the side and was laying on the exact same pillow, just rubbing her hands, and because her hands started getting ice cold the night, and during the night she just started making weird noises, and she kept on saying the children's names. And 2 o'clock when I woke up and gave her the medication, I asked her, "Are you okay?" And she said, "Yes, she's just dreaming." And she laughed. But you see, that's the type of person my wife was. Through her pains, she still smiled. Through her pains and everything that she did, she still inspired other people to do better and, you know, to fight and go through this. And the morning I woke up to pray, 5 o'clock, I woke up to pray, and she sat in the side of the bed and she was just sitting and praying. And I got into bed again. This is just after 5. And normally I just doze her for an hour and asked her, "Are you okay? Do you need help? Can I put you back onto the bed?" She said, "No." Because normally she just get back onto the bed by herself and I'll wake up and she'll be there. And I dozed off and I looked and I saw, when I opened my eyes, she did get back onto the bed, but her hand was in my face. And I held her hand again, and it was still cold. And at the back of my mind, I thought to myself, no, it can't be. Because then I put my foot right on top of her foot as well, and it was cold. And when I lifted my head, that's when I saw her eyes was just, she was gone. So, I don't know, it's still very emotional, but that's a few days after that, that's when I called the team to tell them that my wife has passed on.
Amir, in an interview before, you told her that she will not die. And even while she was diagnosed with cancer, she was out there helping people. She was called a global hero of hope. I watched a video of her today where she's vibrant and she was laughing about the fact that she lost her eyebrows and that she lost her hair because she is a vibrant person. Tell me about her journey after she was diagnosed and when she started inspiring other women as a global hero of hope through her work, through motivational talks, through the Cancer Association. Tell me a little bit about after she was diagnosed.
She, after she was diagnosed, look, it's a shock for everybody. We, the family, they say once you got cancer, your whole family, everybody has cancer. And instead of just keeping for herself, she told everybody about it. And her cousin was part of the cancer relay for hope, or the cancer association, the normal or the yearly relay, the cancer relays. And, she invited her to go with. And so how the cancer relay of hope is, it starts from 6 till 6 in the morning. And when she got there, she met quite a lot of people. And this was just, sorry, I forgot to mention this, during a diagnosis, the cancer relay of hope of the Garden Route. The Garden Route gave her accommodation in George, where she had to go for treatments, for chemotherapy, for whatever treatment she had to go for. And she met a lot of friends there at the home. And everybody said the same thing. Everybody had the same story. And that started inspiring her as well. And then a cousin was part of the relay as well. And then when we got there, her whole mindset changed, because now it's somebody that, or these people that's doing something towards cancer, and the stalls, night markets, it's just vibrant. It's happy. Everybody's happy. And everybody's just relaying around the field and they're doing it for a good cause. And that inspired her. And she said, you know what? Next year, I want my own team. And that's what she did. She started her own team. And we started selling rotis and curries, and we raised over 10,000 rand, which is a lot, and that all went towards the Cancer Association. And then she got more involved with the committee, and through the Gardening Route Committee, and she was then nominated to be the International Global Hero of Hope, and then she was chosen the National International Global Hero of Hope. And this, through all her treatments and everything that she went, she still went out to every relay, every event, every, you know, whatever event there was, people asked, listen, come speak, motivate, she would be there. And I was on the side. So wherever she went, I went. And I knew that sometimes she wasn't feeling well, she still had aches and pains and stuff, but she'd still be there to inspire people. She'd still be there to put a smile on other people's face, because at the end of the day, there's always hope. We never know. And one thing that I've learned from this is that only God decides when we are taken from this earth. Only He has that. And your doctors, whoever can tell you, you know what, tomorrow, the day after that, whatever the case may be, that would be your last day. Doctors can't say. It's only God that decides when your last day would be. So whatever family support, whatever the case you have, you need to lean on to them as well and live the best life that you can. And that was her journey. Her journey was here to inspire people and tell people, you know what, there's hope. There's hope. Don't let doctors or anybody tell you, you know what, you've got two months to live or 3 months to live. It's not their choice. And she was here to tell them that.
The short phone call that I had that morning before I was going to interview her the very next week, we spoke about her children, and she was quite excited to speak about the little ones. And I want to know, what kind of mom is she?
She loves the kids, eh? My wife would, she just wanted the best for them. She honestly, she just wanted that, and with morals and values, and she was strict. But also, you know, she had a ways of looking after the kids and you know, putting in the values or good values into them as well. And she loved them dearly. My son, my daughter, she'd only want the best for them. Only the best. And I don't know, there's such a lot of things that I can't say. She was just a happy mom, a lovable mom, a truthful mom. When she came home and she see them for the first time, is, you know, just holding on to them, seeing for them for the first time. I remember on Eid, when it comes to Eid or labaring as we call it, she just want the best. She would make a way for them to have a special day as well. And she was honestly I'm not saying or degrading other moms as well, but she was for me a super mom, in a sense that she really cared for them.
Your wife is an inspiration to so many people who's listening to this podcast today. And I listen how you speak of her, and I realize that we need to commend you as well for being a good husband. Because women need support, and partners need support, and men need support. But I do wonder, what's it like living with someone who has cancer? What is it? What does the household look like? What do you go through? What are the feelings and emotions that you experience?
Obviously there's fear. There's always fear. That for me personally now, there's always fear. But with, because we moved in with the parents as well, with a mom and a dad, they won't show it. They need to be positive for her as well. And I think the way my wife was, that her positivity, actually, she feeded that onto us. And there were times when we forgot that she had cancer. We treated her normal, not a person that has cancer or a person that's sick or whatever the case may be. So she was normal. She was like us inside of the house. Yes, at first there is that fear, there is that doubt. You'll hear this uncle say, okay, try this, that auntie say, try that, or whatever the case may be. But the household, obviously, it does change. It brings the people closer to together as well, and that's what you really want. It brings family closer. And the nice thing is that it brought this family together so that we can actually start looking out for other people as well, and with the cancer relay for hope. And we see it even with her passing as well, we're still continuing with the cancer relay. We want to be there, we want to help other people as well. So yes, your household do change, but it all depends on the support that you give to that person, and the positivity that you need to put or instill into the person that has cancer. They need to know that, you know what, we are there for you, we do care for you, we are behind you 100%, and that's exactly what they need.
You were praying that morning at 5 a.m. and you found your wife also bowing and doing her prayers the same morning that she left us. She was buried the next day. And now you're a single dad.
Yeah, I was married for over 10 years. And look, everything that I did, I did it for the love of my wife. And I can say that I really cared for her. A lot of people that who knows us, who know me as well, know how much I love my wife. And the kids are there. And the thing is that, in a way, I was prepared, because as soon as I get home, I had a routine. I had to see to the kids, wash the kids, at the same time see to her, do the washing, cook the food. While the food is cooked, I got the washing in the washing machine as well. Take them out, dry them, clean them, dress them, make sure that they eat, run back to my wife, make sure my wife has the medication, etc. When they sleep, I make sure my wife is okay again, and when she does off, I sleep a little until I have to look after her again. So I'm a single dad now, but my wife still lives in my heart. She'll always live there. I said I'll never take this wedding ring off, so I love her dearly. And just to touch base on something as well, just a little story. I don't know if I'm going off topic, but what happened though is that me and my wife started dating. I know you asked this question, what made me fall in love with her as well. We started dating, but just briefly, you know, I started chatting. Those were the times on Mixit still. I don't know if you remember Mixit, so and I was playing cricket at the time, and she was studying in Cape Town at the International Academy of Health, Body and Skin Care. And I left, because I just briefly met her, and we started chatting, and we left to go play cricket in Port Elizabeth. And we stopped at Refuge on the End, which is like halfway to Mossel Bay, like 2 hours out of Mossel Bay. And I remember we're going to the Shell shop, inside to the Shell little shop that they had, and it came out, and there was a guy standing inside the door, a guy with a fez on his head and busy smoking. And I went to him and said, "Uncle, how are you?" And he said, "No, I'm fine, I'm good." And I said, "Okay, cool." And I was like, "Do you know how far P is from here?" And he said, "It's another 2 or 4 more hours or something like that." And I was, "Okay, where are you from?" And he said, "He's from Mossel Bay." And I said, "Oh, well, I know people from Mossel Bay." And he said, "Who?" And I said, "Another girl, her name is Sadia." And he looked at me and he said, "You're talking about my daughter?" And and I'm like, "Your daughter?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "A mother's name is Sadia." He said, "Yeah, there she in the bucket." And I went and I introduced myself, and it was 2 o'clock that morning. I sent her a message, and she couldn't believe it, and they couldn't believe it. And her father said she's going to come home one day with a boy from Cape Town. And yeah, the rest is history. So I just wanted to touch on that as well.
We introduced Sadia Murat as a global hero of hope. And I want to know from you, why do you think your wife inspires other people, inspires our community, inspires other women?
I think it's the character, the way she was brought up, I would say, and the values that was instilled in her. Her father, her parents were they that type of people. They cared a lot for the community. They still do. And that values was instilled in her to care for the community and be a truthful person. And I think that's the values and what other people saw. And she could get into your heart very quickly. And she would really go out of her way to inspire people to make sure people is okay. And she's one of those people that make sure other people's okay. If she get the least, but if you at least you got something to eat, even if you give me a little and you got enough to eat, then she's happy. So and I think that made her that global hero of hope. The way she could inspire people, the way she could bring back hope to people, and that she could go back to the community and do that. But again, to come back, it's the way she was brought up in her values that was instilled in her, and her father, her mother, still exactly they still the same, key a lot about the community. And even after death, the way, I don't know if you saw a video already on Facebook, but it was on a Sunday morning and somebody just came to knock on the door. And when we opened the door, the whole road was full of people, just standing with hands in both hands in the air, and they were blowing these horns. And just out of respect, and that just shows what she did for this community, and what respect they have for her and for her parents as well.
I'm in an unusual miracle world. If Sadia had to listen to this podcast, what would you say to her?
I love you. I love you so much. I hope you're okay. I hope all your pain is gone. And I'll wait for me at the gates of heaven. Wait for me. I'll be there. Whenever God takes me away, I will be with you. And I love you so much, and I will make sure that I take care of these kids the way you wanted me to. Whatever wishes you had for them as well, I will make sure I do that. And I love you. I love you. I never stopped loving you. And we will be, one day when God decides to take me away from this earth, we will be together soon as well. So, for now, I'll do what I need to do to look after the kids and myself. Firstly, myself, then the kids. But you wait for me at the gates of heaven.
You told her before that she will not die.
Yes.
Sadia Murat lives on. This podcast is in honor of Sadia Murat.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Fed Health. FedHealth's FlexiFed 2 and 3 options offer superb maternity and childhood benefits, including its free FedHealth baby program to see members through their pregnancy and parenting journeys. Choose FedHealth for trusted medical aid cover that gives you choice, flexibility, and control, and that will be with you through every stage of your family's unique journey. FedHealth. We let you be you.